This is the Alien UFO Podcast, episode 232, and I'm your host, Simon Bowne. And to hear the extended version of this episode, please join Patreon. This week, I'm talking to Jeanette Ross about her book, The Children of Missing Time. It wasn't random, it was by design. Jeanette was born an intuitive empath, sensitive, and has over 20 years' experience as a lead paranormal investigator. She is a lifelong experiencer of the UFO alien abduction phenomenon. Hi, Jeanette, and thanks for coming on the podcast. We're going to be talking about your book. It's called The Children of Missing Time. It wasn't random, it was by design. And so could you tell us, how did your experiences start?
Well, my experiences began back in the 1990s. And I would say 1997 is when I like to say when there was a fracture in my reality. I was coming home from work. I worked in New Jersey. And I had like a two-hour ride home every night. And I lived in the Hudson Valley, not far from the Pine Bush area, where back in the 80s and 90s, there was a UFO flap there. There was an extraordinary amount of activity going on. But I really personally wasn't paying attention to it. I actually didn't pay attention to it until I had my own experiences. So it began. I was leaving work. I would get off of work at 2 p.m. every, you know, five nights a week, religiously, like clockwork, get off at 2 p.m. And I'd be home by 4 a.m., no later. So I'm on my last stretch of road this one particular night in 1997. And it was a dark, winding road. It was about a two-mile dark backcountry road. No streetlights, hardly any houses. And then I would have to make a left onto my dirt driveway. And that was about a mile to get to the farmhouse, which was about a 152-acre farmhouse. And we had no neighbors. So that's how desolate of an area I lived in. So I get to the last stretch, and I'm about a mile away from my home. And all of a sudden, there was a light above the car. I have this like light shining down. And I roll down the window to go to look to see what it is. Because again, there's no streetlights. There's no cars on the road. Most nights when I would come home, there would only be me on the road. It was very desolate where I lived. And the moment that I looked up at the light, I couldn't see anything. It was just like this bright white light shining down. And then my next memory is me halfway down my dirt driveway. My hands are on the wheel. The car is moving. And I am completely, completely disoriented, perplexed, shocked, confused is a very good word, because I'm now the sun is bright shining. And the last memory I have is, it should be 4 a.m, completely dark out. So I get to the end of the driveway, and back then I didn't have a cell phone. It was the 90s, so I didn't have a cell phone, and I didn't have a watch on, so I couldn't like look down to see what time it was. I ran in the house because it totally made no sense to me. I'd get in the house, and I'd go in the kitchen, and the clock's at 6 a.m., Well, I cannot tell you what went through my head at that moment. I was in complete shock, dismay, confused. I just like plopped down in the chair and just like sat there like trying to figure out, like I'm going over in my head. Okay, I remember the white light above the car, but I couldn't remember anything in between that, between the white light over the car and then all of a sudden, the sun's shining bright, and I'm halfway down the driveway when my last memory was I was on the back dark country road a mile from my house. So I'm sitting there, and I'm like, okay, I must be, maybe I'm tired. I don't know. I'll think about this tomorrow. So I go upstairs. I go to bed. I come in the morning, and my husband was downstairs in the kitchen. I had only one daughter at that time. And I was like, you know, I ask him, I look and I'm like, is our clock broken? And he's like, no, why? And I was like, because, well, and then I said, never mind. You know, I was like, kept going like, well, because, never mind. I guess I couldn't even explain it to myself at that point. And so he didn't think anything of it. And for the next few days, I was withdrawn. He kept asking me what was wrong, and I kept saying nothing. And I would take the car out, and I would go back to the same location, and I would drive it again, trying to jog my own memory. Like, I wanted to know so bad what happened. How did I miss 2 hours of time? And you got to remember, back then, there was no big discussion about missing time. There was a book by Bud Hopkins, but at that moment when that happened to me, I didn't know that there was a book by Bud Hopkins about missing time. So, you know, again, I spent a few days going over and over, and it was really bothering me. I mean, really bothering me. So, you know, how I put it is, you know, I got back to the business of life. I had, you know, work, kids got to go to school, got to pay bills. So I just kind of fell back in my routine, but it always bothered me. It just sat there lingering in the back of my mind, like, what happened to me? There was like literally zero memory. The light above the car, and then it's morning, and there's 2 hours in between unaccounted for. Okay. So moving on, we go about our life, we go about our world. I find out I'm pregnant a couple months later, and 9 months later, my daughter Taylor was born. And again, I don't equate what happened that night with her birth whatsoever. I'm still, you know, have no answers. It's sitting behind my head, but there's no thought I'm putting into it. You know, like, I'm hoping like something will jog my memory down the line, but nothing does. She's born on Valentine's Day in 1998, February 1998. About 5 months after she's born, we go visit family, and we're coming back about midnight. And at this night, I'm not alone. I'm driving. My husband was in the passenger seat, and now the two kids were in the back sleeping. It was very late. And we're on that same back, dark, winding road that I seen that bright light over my car. We're going around the bend at the same exact location. He starts screaming, oh my God, oh my God, look at this thing. Like, and he's just like screaming. And I'm like, what? And I'm trying to watch the road because it is very dark. There were no streetlights. And all of a sudden, I see it. And it's huge. And it's V-shaped. And there's multicolored lights under it. I pull the car over to the side of the road. And we both get out. And we are standing there. I mean, it was a tree line, Simon. It was like, it was right there. And it was massive. And we were just like both frozen. We weren't scared. But we were just like frozen in that moment of just like, I think the silence was the most eerie part, the silence and the size. But it was gliding. It was just gliding over the tree line, gliding over the car. And then it kind of glided over there was like a field behind the tree line. And so I actually went down into where the field was. He was standing by the car where the kids were. And I went down to the field, and it was just like lingering there for a minute. And then it was like maybe 5 minutes. It just lingered. I was just staring at it. I was in awe. And then it just started moving again. And so it was very slow. It goes over our car again. And you know, we just get back in the car. He's like, let's just get back in the car. I said, well, maybe it has something to do with the Air Force base because we weren't far from an Air Force base. That was the first thing I thought of. I wasn't even thinking. As quiet as it was, as huge as it was, my first thought was not a UFO. So we get in the car and we're driving and it's like it's gliding along with us. And then I make a left-hand turn into the driveway. And it just kind of glides off into the night really slowly towards Pine Bush. So we get home and my husband's like, you know, there's a lot. He knew more about it than I did. He's like, you know, I heard a lot of activity going on here in the Pine Bush area and maybe you should call somebody, talk to somebody. And he was like giving me ideas. And I'm like, yeah, but who knows? It could have something to do with the Air Force Base too. We don't know. You know, and he was like, no, I think it's a UFO. Because, again, he actually knew more about what was going on than I did. So I was like, okay, I'll get to it. And again, I really didn't get to it. So at this point, within a year and a half, I have a missing time episode and we have direct contact with a UFO. A few months after that, he wakes up again. He's yelling again. He wakes up, but he was yelling again. And he's yelling for me to come to the window. And he's like, oh, but he's doing the oh my God thing again. And I'm like, what? And he looks out over the farm. And again, we lived on 152 acres. And there were these circles carved into the land. And I'm like, what is that? You know, I'm like, well, maybe the farmer was here yesterday. Maybe they did something. And he was like, I didn't hear anything. Did you? And I'm like, no. He's like, we would have heard a tractor. We would have heard something. So I was like, all right, I'll call the landlord in the morning. And you know, when it's a little early. I mean, this was like 7 in the morning when he was like yelling for me. So I was giving the farmer a little time. And I call him about 9, 10 o'clock. And I'm like, were you here yesterday? Did you do something with the fields? Because it was a cornfield. And he's like, no. And I'm like, he's like, why? I'm like, oh, nothing. There just looked like there was some activity out there, but maybe it was nothing. And he didn't pay no mind. He didn't ask no questions. So then we go out. We did go out to the circles. I bring my two daughters with us. And we walk down and we're walking through them. And I remember heavy static electricity. And I remember it being very ice cold in the circles. By this point, you know, we're looking at each other. And I'm still not grasping anything. Okay, now we have crop circles. We've had contact with a UFO. I've had missing time, but I don't even know I had had missing time. I just know that I had 2 hours of time that was missing from my life. So we go, I'm like, look, why don't we go down to the library? Maybe the local library has something on this. I don't know. Well, when we went down to the local library and we started talking to local people and talking to the librarian and she's showing us books and stuff, that's when the pieces started coming together. But I still wasn't there. I still wasn't jumping on the fact that we had alien contact or anything like that. The librarian suggested to me a few books. One of the books she had suggested was Bud Hopkins' Missing Time. And after I read that book, that's when I knew something happened to me. I had a hard time dealing with the fact that maybe something like that had happened to me. But, you know, after reading his book, there was no doubt that that had happened to me. Then we revisited the UFO that we had seen, and it was definitely 100% a UFO. And now we have the crop circles, which, Simon, you know, you have people that have had UFO contact and just UFO contact. You have people that have had just missing time episode. And then you've had people that have had interactions with just crop circles. We had all three in under 2 years. And my mind didn't really think that deeply into it, is the best way I can put it, till years later, about the magnitude of that moment, not just in my life, but in my entire family's life, meaning my life, my children's, and my husband's at the time. So after the crop circles, and after we walked through them, and, you know, we were having all kinds of activity at the farmhouse. My daughter started seeing things and describing things that no one else could see. And the one that got me the most, I think, was the fact that, I mean, she was seeing things and she'd be like, oh, I see a little boy over there, or, you know, I see a man walking through the wall. And I believed her. I just didn't have enough knowledge about the phenomenon to understand it. I didn't dismiss it, which back then, a lot of parents would dismiss what their children were saying. I didn't dismiss it. I listened to her. I had my ears open and I, you know, comforted her in her moments of seeing things. When I really knew something was going on was when she said, hey, I just seen Fluffy run across the couch. And Fluffy was a cat we had who had passed away 6 months earlier. And that's when I knew that she had some kind of ability beyond the veil. And I needed books on that. I needed a lot of books back then, Simon. And there was no internet, so I couldn't just look it up on the computer. So now I'm getting books on the paranormal. So I'm doing research on that and little children and, you know, children that get the gift. And, you know, a lot of it was, some of it was, they would say that, you know, it would run within the bloodline. So if the child was having, was able to go beyond the veil and communicate beyond the veil, maybe their grandmother had the gift or their parents had the gift. We didn't have the gift. So, and, you know, I talked to a lot of people in our family, both sides, and nobody had the gift. So, you know, we were just like, wow, this is really extraordinary. So we wound up, they're selling the farm. And then we moved to a smaller farmhouse, not too far from where all of our, you know, experience had happened beginning in 1997. The ones that happened in such a short period of time. We get to the new farmhouse and my daughter's abilities are just through the roof. I mean, it's daily. I mean, she's her world. Communicating with us and communicating beyond the veil was a daily routine for her. And I just got used to it. You know, she would see this, she would see that. I knew when she was looking at something, when she would be staring, and I'd have to ask her, what are you looking at? One of the profound moments of it, one of them, she was staring out into the yard. And I said, what are you looking at? And she said, there's a Native American sitting on our lawn and he's banging a drum. So he was like communicating with her somehow. And I found that very interesting. That intrigued me because two of my four children do have Celtic and Native American heritage in their bloodline, along with a Swedish. I have Italian too, but their abilities weren't coming from that. It was a combination of, I think, possibly dormant DNA somewhere in the bloodline and it awakening now in this lifetime for whatever reason connected to the phenomenon because... My next profound event happens when she was four. And I was pregnant with her sister. And her sister was born in 2002. And she comes into my bedroom. And I was, you know, I was sick. It was the end of the pregnancy. I was just laying there. It was earlier in the day. And she comes in and she touches my hand. And she's standing at the end of the bed and she's looking above my head. And I'm like, again, you know, I was like, Taylor, what are you looking at? You know, I said that a lot to her. But this time she was like, Mommy, there's a daddy angel above your head. And I'm thinking, okay, angels, pregnancy, protection. You know, that's the first thing you would think of. And I'm like, oh, honey, what are they doing? Or what is he doing? And she said it was a man. It was a daddy angel that she referred to it. And I said, what is he doing? And she said, he's kissing your forehead. Now, again, I'm thinking protection, blessing, I don't know. And I said, what is he wearing? And she said, he's wearing white. He had blonde hair, but no feet. So no feet. So I was like, okay. And, you know, it was a very warm feeling. There was nothing scary in the room. It was very peaceful. You could feel the energy of peace and love in the room. So at that moment, I was like, wow, there's something going on here, because I wasn't very spiritual at that time, but I was, when I say religious, I was Catholic and we did the sacraments, went to church. I got my children baptized. I believed that the holy water protected them. So but I was somewhere in between. My family that I grew up with, they would go to church every week and they were Catholic and, you know, they followed the whole thing. But I was starting to, I think my daughter's presence in my life was awakening me to spirituality. That's what I think was happening. And that very well could be part of the design of what happened.
Do you think that your daughter was affected during that missing time when you were on your way home from work?
I'm glad you asked this question, because it took me many years to try to figure out. And this is what I've come up with, what potentially could have happened. Because, again, the missing time, I don't remember what happened. Some people do remember. Some people remember nothing. So for me to just even remember a fracture that the time was missing was incredible for me, you know, and for anybody that happens to, quite frankly, because there's a lot of people that will never remember. And so I think that it was the grays. I think that they did something that night. I'm not sure what they did. I think that my daughter potentially could have hybrid DNA. I do believe that. Because, I mean, I had her 9 months after that exact time. I you know, bring it back to that. It was like right at that moment. Everything was right at that moment. And she was the only one in the family out of all four of my children that had the seer abilities. Now, my other children, you know, I'll get to them. They had other things happen and other abilities. She was the seer. So she was the one that was able to literally bridge between this world and the other world. And that was on a regular basis for her. So I do think that, I think something happened with Grace that night. I think it was something that I think I was never meant to even remember a fracture of what happened that night. And, you know, I wrote in the book, I do, you know, about people that remember. When you have a fracture in your reality that makes you remember something like that, just even that, oh my God, there's missing time, it shows how strong your soul is. Because grays do not want people to remember, Simon. They don't want you to remember anything. They want to take you. They want to do what they want to do with you. And they want to put you back. Because it's a harvesting of sorts. I mean, some people have talked about that during a missing time abduction, why you have no conscious memory is that when they take you, when they take you and you're totally out, and apparently they put you in a coma-like state and they bring you down to almost death. I've heard this scenario where if you're at almost death, that your soul will leave the body and they'll then implant another soul. And they seem to target bloodlines that have empathic, psychic DNA within certain bloodlines and certain children. And apparently whatever was in my bloodline was awakening within this particular generation. So, definitely it was by design. They didn't just pluck me out one night. They weren't just flying through the sky and said, oh, look, she's coming home late. Let's just pluck her out. They knew exactly what they were doing. Any person at all that is taken, abducted, however anybody wants to say it, that's by design. They knew exactly the moment to take you out. And it's because they also have been following your bloodline. They have ability to look at all your timelines. So I think that, yes, I think that they were trying to tweak something or do something. And yes, I do believe that she has some kind of hybrid DNA in her. Absolutely. For multiple reasons.
My book, Aspects of Alien Abduction, Shocking UFO Encounters, Volume 1, is now on sale. For decades, people around the world have described encounters with non-human beings that seem impossible to explain. In this book, I explore these accounts through the voices of those who say they experience them firsthand, and what emerges is deeply unsettling. The same patterns appear again and again. Mysterious visitors, medical procedures, hybrid programs, and encounters that challenge our understanding of consciousness itself. This suggests a complex strategy being operated by non-human intelligence. It is highly organized, skillfully implemented, and affecting many people worldwide. Aspects of Alien Abduction invites you to consider one of the most profound mysteries of our time. Available now on audiobook, paperback, and Kindle. So you feel that maybe they're aware of your bloodline. Does that suggest to you that your parents or grandparents may have had encounters?
You know, that's a good question. Now, I came from a family that was, how can I put it? I want to say, when I say conservative, like I'm not talking politics. I mean in like stay-at-home mom, my dad worked, you know, like the suburban family, you know, like they would never, ever have a conversation about that. The only conversation that we ever got close to it, and it was a very brief conversation, Simon, was when I was younger and I lived in the Hudson Valley, a different part of Hudson Valley, and I was a child, and this was in the 80s, way before my missing time, and there was a flap where everybody seen it. Everybody was running out on their porch. I think there was like, I can't remember exactly what it was. I think there might have been like 6 or 9 or something UFOs in a row going through the sky, and everybody seen it. People were pulling their cars over it. And we were standing on the back porch and we seen it. And I remember going back into the house and, you know, we were asking questions now because now people are calling the police, they're calling the Air Force, you know. And I remember saying to my parents, like, what is a UFO? You know, like, and my father, who was in the Navy, all he said was, he goes, Yeah, they're, unidentified flying objects. And then we got into conversations because our neighbors are coming over and they're talking about aliens and stuff. And all he said after they left, he's like, I don't know if I believe in aliens, but I believe in time travel. And that's all he would ever say about it. That's it. And I would, try to talk about it after that a little bit. And he didn't want to talk about it. He just said, I don't know if I believe in aliens, but I believe in time travel. And that's all he ever said. So I thought that was very interesting coming from a person who would give the persona to not be open to otherworldly activity is the best way I could put it. So anyway, I do th I don't if anything ever happened with them, they never spoke of it. I do know that bloodlines, especially on the Swedish side, because you had a lot of seers and mystics, back in the day, coming from that bloodline. And my grandfather that passed away way before I was ever born, he came from Sweden. So it is possible that he could have had something in his, DNA, but I'll never know, and nobody ever talked about it, and there's no way for me to find out now. But as for even on my husband's side, nobody that was around, like his parents or my grandparents that I was able to speak to, nobody ever spoke of it. So I do think that something happened that night. It could be partially something within my DNA that was dormant for a while, because they say that that can happen also, and that it will awaken with empathetic, when you have a generation that's highly empathetic. So it is possible that maybe the generation before me, which was more closed off to the phenomenon than generations now, maybe they weren't as open to it, so that was laying dormant. And maybe the aliens or interdimensional beings, maybe they knew that we were going to awaken, and maybe there was something that my children were going to do or something I was going to do. And maybe the Greys were trying to disrupt something that I was supposed to do. And because what I realized later on down the line, the interaction from the Nordics, which I did not know was Nordics at the time when my daughter seeing the daddy angel, I did through research find out that yes, in very rare instances, Nordics will come in years later to try to reverse whatever damage was done by the Greys with certain bloodlines and certain lineages that they monitor, track, and guide. Now, the Nordics involvement in my life, they have been with me periodically ever since well, they were probably with me before that. I just didn't know that moment that my daughter seen them and verbally told me, which was another interesting incident, because they say that most of the time the Nordics will not allow any human to see them. They just like to do their work behind the scenes, because, true Nordics, because you have people that have a different opinion of Nordic. And again, that's getting into what happened during the Lyrian time and how, factions broke off, and that's how the Nordic came to be, the spiritual interdimensional Nordics, because a certain faction of their culture went towards the AI or whatever kind of technology they were using back then. And the other part, which became the Nordic, was going the spiritual route, almost something like what's unfolding here now in our day and time. But I think what happened the night of that my daughter's seen, which she described as a daddy angel, I think they were like, come on, lady, it's time to wake up. Because, I mean, there was a UFO. I have 2 hours of missing time. There are three large circles on our property. All right, which I'll get back to that too. I mean, what did I need? Singing angels, you know, to wake up and, you know, think about it. I mean, and at this point, Simon, this is all under 5 years of heavy, and it is heavy when you think about it, you know, contact. Like they're trying to get through to me something. And I think at that point, I think obviously because Nordics, when they're working with human families, it's not like they're popping up in your kitchen and, like, you know, having a conversation with you every day. They're in the background. They are making sure that certain things unfold at a certain time and that certain families, certain bloodlines, and certain lineages carry a soul resonance within their bloodline to be able to anchor certain energies into the earth, especially now when we're coming up on a technology age, which is going to affect the empathetic soul resonance that they want anchored into the earth. So I think that at that point, they knew that the only thing to get through to me at that moment was, okay, we're going to let her see us, and we know that she's going to believe her. You know what I'm saying? So I think that that's what I, because that was it. That was the aha moment. But the aha moment didn't come right at that moment. It was through, it was like an awakening. It was like, wake up. I woke up a little bit more. And I did a lot of research, and that's how I started to put it together. And I was like, okay, that's what's going on here.
Have you ever had that thing when you wake up in the middle of the night and there's greys in your room or Nordics? Have you ever had that kind of encounter?
Yes, the Nordics, when I've gone into deep meditation, I interact with them quite often. My last interaction with them was August of last year. So it's more telepathic. It's like a download of information. They're just guiding me. I think they're guiding me for something that only they know about. And the grays, no, I have never had the grays in my bed. And I think the grays were the ones that did the were responsible for my missing time, though. The only reason why I think the grays were responsible for my missing time, because the closest I got to any gray anything was a very vivid dream. So no, I didn't have the grays popping up in my room. The grays seem to attract to low frequency for some reason. So they're a way for somebody to have a low frequency moment. And I notoriously am a very high frequency. And if I'm a low frequency, I pick myself up pretty quick. And I'm a very stubborn person. So I'm not a very easily malleable person, meaning that grays will wait for somebody to, like if somebody's sad about losing a loved one, or if someone might be, you know, addicted to something, or might have a drinking problem, or just had a divorce and was very depressed, or they wait for somebody's frequency to be low, I noticed. And then they'll appear to people. And again, there's two different factions of grays also. You know, it's not all grays are like that, but I have noticed that a lot of people, and sadly, Simon, this is why back, let's say the 70s, 80s, maybe even 60s, you know, a lot of people that came forward with stories were dismissed because they looked at these people and they were like, oh, well, that person's an alcoholic, or that person's does drugs, or that person, whatever the problem was. And they dismissed this person. Meanwhile, this person was having a real experience and, quite frankly, could have used support and love at that time. You know, there were a lot of those stories too. So for me with the grays, no, I had one vivid dream that did replay over and over again for like months after my missing time. And I would just think it was a dream. And it would be me driving down the driveway. I see a light out in the field. I get out of the car thinking that somebody's camping on our property. And when I get to where the light is, all of a sudden I see two beings hunched over their little saucer craft. And the minute they turn around and lock eyes with me, I wake up and I can't go back to sleep. And that was the closest interaction, but it's very vivid. But it was a dream. So it was a recurring dream. And I don't have a lot of vivid dreams. That one played over and over for a while. I did have, and I did not talk about this in the book because this was an incident in 1996. And I'm going to bring this up only because of, you know, there's a lot of talk about the hybrid bloodline genetics. And this is another part of the phenomenon that other women have experienced of having a fetus missing. But I left this out of the book because I was focused more on my beginning of my believing or starting to believe or putting pieces together, and where I could actually tie the pieces together, and where I actually had my daughters were witnesses, my husband at the time were witnesses, I'm a witness, you know, like there was a whole family that experienced that part of it that can corroborate all of those incidents in a short period of time. So, and that was the most profound moment in my life with the phenomenon. But in 1996, I was pregnant. And I only had my one daughter from a previous relationship. And I was pregnant, went to the gynecologist at 3 months, had a sonogram. You know, everything was good. You know, they did. There's 3-4 months, whatever, in between there. Heartbeat. There's a fetus there. We have pictures. A fetus. Okay. I go back, Simon, for my 6-month sonogram. I bring my little daughter with me, and because I want her to see the baby and get excited. So I'm going, I'm in there. And the doctor is sitting there with the thing over my stomach. And they're like, I'm like looking and I don't see anything. And he's like clicking and clicking and whatever. And they're trying. He's like, I'll be right back. Next thing I know, I got another doctor coming in. I got another doctor coming in. And I'm like, whoa, what is going on? And I literally look at them. Now I think I got 5 doctors standing around me. I'm like, what's going on? And I got my little daughter there too. So they didn't really want to talk in front of her. I think one of the nurses came in and said, let's bring her for a lollipop or something. And they turn around to me and they're like, you start asking me questions. They're like, did you bleed? Did you fall? Did you, you know, it's crazy questions. And I'm like, no, no, no. What is going on? And they literally said, there's no fetus. And I'm like, what are you talking about? I was just here, you know, a few months ago. You did a sonogram. There was a fetus there. I didn't bleed. I didn't pass anything. I didn't have a miscarriage. My stomach is growing. You can see I look like I'm 6 months pregnant. And they turned around and they walked out. They come back in and they're like, we need to get something, a certain stuff out of you. I don't even know what the hell they were saying. And they're like, we have to do it now. And I'm like, whoa, what do you have to get what out now? What? You're telling me there's no fetus there. They're like, no, we don't know what happened. We don't know what's going on. There should be a fetus there. You didn't pass anything. We see something strange and we need to do, you know, it was a DNC. You know, they would do that if a woman had a miscarriage or something like that. You know, they clean out and so the uterus can go back. And I literally was like, no, I need to go home. I need to process this first. I said, I have my daughter here. I don't even have anybody to watch her. And they're like, don't worry, the nurse will watch her. I mean, they wanted to go in at that moment, Simon. They were willing to have a nurse watch my daughter. They wanted to take me in. It was so crazy. They actually would not let me leave the hospital. I had to sign all kinds of waivers saying that if I left the hospital against medical advice, that that nobody, my that if I died, that my family couldn't sue, something like that. So I signed their waivers and stuff. And I left and I went home and I talked to my husband and I'm like, I don't know what's happening. He's like, just go have the procedure or whatever. And, you know, so that was something really weird. And so through the years, I have heard these women having missing fetuses and stuff. And, you know, where I started my story in the book, you know, with the missing time, that all connects with each other. But I did have this very odd circumstance with a missing fetus in 96, a year before my missing time. So yeah, there's something there. And like my daughter that I was carrying at the time that the daddy angel did the kiss, which, as I did my research years later, they said in rare circumstances, the kiss is not a kiss and the kiss is not a kiss of protection. It's something of an activation code. So it's almost like they were transferring some kind of code into my frequency, into my DNA, which then was also transferring into the child I was carrying DNA. And it's almost like a QR code, but something that can't be unlocked by anything, not even myself. Like, I will never know what it is. And the reason for that is because of the darker factions and darker entities, they go into your consciousness. And they're highly telepathic. And they will try to retrieve that data when you're sleeping or, you know, if you have a depressed moment or if you're having a loss of a family member and you're feeling sad, they will try to extract that information from your consciousness. And these darker factions are highly telepathic. And they know, believe me, they know what they're doing. So whatever was downloaded into my frequency, I would say, and others. I'm not just saying it happens to me. There's other people out there that are chosen to carry frequencies, and it has to do with anchoring something into the earth. And I think it had to do with what's going on now. That's why I called the book "The Children of Missing Time," because I feel that for generations now. And at least, you know, I mean, we can go back to the 50s, we can go back to the 60s and 70s, the abductions that went on then. But I think those abductions back in the 50s and 60s were more, I think they were experimenting more. I don't think they were abducting for genetic purposes in the beginning. I think it was, they were testing out certain things to see what would work. And so I think that the darker factions were tweaking our DNA for their nefarious purposes. And then I think that like the Palladians, the Arcturians, the Nordics, they're working in the background, trying to preserve and save certain lineages that carry certain frequencies and certain gifts that can continue to anchor soul resonance, empathy, love, compassion, all of that into the earth. And so there was this battle going on back and forth. You had, you know, people that were having face-to-face contact with Palladians. I did not. My contact, my interaction are with Nordics. And it's, I think it's only when they need to give me, download something into me. Because quite frankly, my book, Simon, when I started the book, because I had 30 years of stories, you know, that happened through my family. We have 30 years of stories and interactions and experiences, stuff that happened. So the book was supposed to just be about that. And the book turned into a lot of other things that I just feel was some of it being passed on that I wasn't even going to write about. So that even though it's not a long book, there's some important stuff in there for people. Whether it might be needed now or in the near future, I don't know. It's just stuff for people to read, to hold on to and maybe reflect back to, because we are coming up on uncertain times. And, you know, you have many worlds before us that have fell from misuse of technology. And I think that these children, the children of missing time, people being brought in and out of dimensions, timelines, tweaked, some being tweaked for nefarious purpose, some being used to anchor the human empathy, love, compassion, soul resonance into the earth to keep the earth and the soul resonance so people can ascend to where our soul is going. I think there's been a battle for the soul for years, and I think people are just starting to realize that. And then, quite frankly, potentially, because, you know, I don't know. I mean, we all, you know, share our theories and our thoughts and our opinions. I don't think any of us know for sure. Maybe there was a battle for my soul back then, and that's why they came in. Because for Nordics, and I'm a highly, highly sensitive, empathetic person, Simon. I walk into a room. If I walk into a room, and I can't help it, if I walk into a room and there are people that are evil or not good, or I know they're in the room and they have ill intent, maybe not towards me, but towards whatever, I actually get physically ill from it. I have to walk out of the room. It affects my energy field. Like, I pick up on things very heavily. So there could have been a battle for my soul, like others. I'm not just saying this happens to me. No, I think there was a battle for other people's souls too. You know, everybody has their own different experience. And getting back to the grays, when you asked me about the grays, there are two factions of the grays. Not all the grays are like that. There are the grays that are working for the reptilians. And so those are the ones that are going for the low frequency individuals. I don't want to say it like that, like a person that's having a moment of low frequency, not that they're low frequency all the time. They're looking to exploit a moment in their life that's creating their frequency to be low. There are another faction of grays that the Nordics do work with. And the reason for that is the Nordics tried to help certain grays that kept a spark of themselves and trying to reunite certain grays with their bloodline so they can help repair their DNA of their bloodline that somehow got lost down the line because there was this merge. There's always been this through ancient civilizations, this wanting to live forever, this wanting to merge consciousness with technology. This is not the first time that, you know, we're not the first people to discover this. This is not for the first time this is happening. So, yeah, so you have two different factions of grace. One's that you're never, that the Nordics or the Palladians or Arcturians will never be able to get through to. And then you do have the faction of grays that want to be saved, that remember, they actually remember what they were before. And so in order for their bloodline to live on, they then come back and they try to help repair their bloodline with the help of the Nordics that sometimes work in the background.
The book is called The Children of Missing Time. It wasn't random. It was by design. And that is on Amazon, isn't it?
It is on Barnes & Noble. And it is on Kobo, Rakuten, and it's on Google Books. It was on Amazon, but right now there was some kind of glitch in the system, and the manuscript is not connected to it right now. So right now it's sold on Barnes & Noble, Kobo, Rakuten, and Google Books. And your book is coming out. I can't wait to read it.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, that's on Monday.
I know.
It says on there it's book one of six. So do you have another one coming out?
Yes, it will be coming out within the next 6 months, probably closer to 6 months from now. And yeah, I'm excited about that one. That one I've been working on for a while too. Yeah, it's a 6-volume series because I'm basically taking my knowledge, experiences, work I've done, and combining it over 3 volumes because it is 30 years worth of experiences and knowledge, basically.
Yeah, it's amazing. Thanks a lot for coming on the podcast.
Well, it was my pleasure, and good luck. And I can't wait to read your book, Simon. Thank you so much for having me, and stay in touch.
That was an interview with Jeanette Ross about her book, The Children of Missing Time. It wasn't random, it was by design. My new book, titled Aspects of Alien Abduction, Shocking UFO Encounters, Volume 1, has been published and is now available on Amazon. You can get it on paperback, audiobook or Kindle, and you can get the audiobook on Spotify. And a great way to support this podcast is to sign up to Patreon, where you can get exclusive access to the extended version of this episode. Just go to patreon.com/alienufopodcast. And if you enjoy this podcast, please leave a review and be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. And thanks for listening.